Last week we looked at worldwide Christianity, and today we're looking at worldwide opportunity. Again, we've had a reading from the book of Acts, this time from chapter 19. I'm not going to expound it, but just to give the flavor. Here we saw how Paul was in Ephesus for 3 years, and for more than 2 years of that time, he took a group together into a building called the School of Tyrannus. He trained them, made them disciples, and it then finishes by saying, this continued for 2 years so that all the residents of Asia, that is the province of Asia in western Turkey, heard the word of the Lord. How do they hear the word of the Lord? They didn't hear it from Paul, because Paul was in Ephesus. Some of the cities of Asia, he writes to them and says that he hasn't visited them. So how do they hear the gospel? Well, I would suggest that they heard it through the evangelization carried out by those disciples of Paul who went out and spread the message. One of them was a man called Epaphras, and he established the church in Colossae, we are told as we read through the letter to the Colossians. Opportunities were there. As people who were made disciples went out and reproduced churches in other places. It's a changing world that we're living in today. Just in the last few years, we've seen the collapse of communism, something that we never expected would happen. We've seen also in recent years the rise of Islamic fundamentalism, so that it's a totally different world now from what it was, say, 20 years ago. And no longer do we have two power blocks, the American-based bloc and the Soviet-based bloc. The place is being fragmented. There is now only one superpower, which is America. And that probably is not a terribly healthy thing for the world as a whole. No balance at all. But the rest of the world is fragmented. We have many power blocks, if they're entitled to the name of a power bloc. We have the European community, for example. Or we have the Pacific Rim community. We have regional groups developing. The Middle East are trying to get together their power bloc, where they can support each other. Japan is more or less a power bloc on its own. China, of course, is certainly one all by itself, and nobody quite knows where China's going to go. What is called a loose cannon, you're never quite sure which way it's going to fire. We have this different world from what it was only 10 years ago. We also have the emergence of ethnic conflicts. We have these going on in the Balkans. We have them in other parts. There's a rise in ethnic sensitivities of people pursuing their goals in favor of their ethnic group. There are wars going all around the world. We don't hear of them so much in the West because they're not affecting us directly. But they are affecting lots of other people directly, especially in Africa. There are refugees mounting. I believe that this refugee crisis is going to develop into a worldwide problem over the next decade. And they're not just going to be a trickle of them, they're going to be in large numbers all over the place, presenting a new challenge to governments and to the church. Where's it all going to end? We are in a period of tremendous transition right now here in the early to mid-90s. At the same time, we have seen the greatest church growth in the history of the church. People at home here are walking around all dejected and despondent because Christianity seems to be losing out, but in the rest of the world it's growing. And it's tragic that so many people in the Western world are totally unaware of the dramatic changes taking place around the world. There's been a shift in the center of gravity, a shift from the West to the other parts of the world, especially Africa, Asia, and Latin America. These are now the dynamo. When we started the Bridgeway work, it was to bridge the gap between the world of the Bible and the world of today, to bridge the gap between the technical reference works and the ordinary reader. A couple of years ago, when I was in Nigeria, I got a sudden brainwave as I was actually speaking and said, it's also to bridge the gap between the West, where most of the resources are, and the rest of the world, where most of the Christians are. And the whole place erupted into cheering and hallelujahs and foot stamping and so on, in typical Nigerian exuberance. So I kept on using it, of course, in other places I went to after that. But that is what we're trying to do. We're trying to shift the resources from the West into the rest of the world. Here we are with about 25% of the Christians gobbling up 96% of the resources. And the other 3/4 of the Christians in the world have got to survive on 4%. And yet out of those poor countries is coming the dynamism that is changing the face of the world. as Christianity is sweeping across population one after the other, bringing people to know our Lord Jesus Christ. This brings me to speak then about the changing role of missionaries. I want to speak about the changing role of missionaries, then talk about a few specific issues and a few specific challenges. The European missionary is no longer the exalted figure that he once was, even if only in his own eyes. Certainly in the colonial period, the imperialistic period where the Western powers dominated the world, there was no doubt that some of this rubbed off onto the missionaries that went from those countries. Not all of them, I'm saying, were inflicted with the same attitude that the governments had. But for all that, there was a general atmosphere of dominance and of imperialism that went with the Western missionary enterprise. But that is no longer the case. As I said last week, it's no longer an advantage to be a white person in many of these countries because of the unwanted baggage that the white population carries with it. People have far better access if they are from Africa or Asia, Latin America. If we go to these places, we have to dismantle this superiority attitude that we have and work alongside people or even work under them. I was at a missionary conference a few years ago where people were talking about the need for cooperation between the sending churches at home here and the agency which helps support the ministries of those sending churches and the missionaries already on the field so that new workers are integrated into the missionary force. And I'm thinking to myself as I heard all this going on, these people are out of touch. What about the national church? And I was going to say something, but I was saved because I noticed there was a Pakistani man that no sooner finished listening to this presentation up front than he said there's a fourth. He said, what about the national church? That is the most important, to see that the national church is part and parcel of anything that's going on. You and I and our churches, we wouldn't appreciate it if somebody suddenly came from another country and said, the Lord led me and my mission agency sent me and I've come here to work in your church or your city or your district. And you say, hey, wait a minute, we've been here for a fair while. This is our patch and this is our territory, this is our responsibility. Surely, you don't just come barging in here telling us what you're going to do. And so we have to have this new perspective and realize that the Western world is not entitled to go barging into all of these countries doing what it wants simply because some missionary felt that that was what the Lord told him to do. It's the national church in these countries that is of prime importance. And we have to learn what it is to work under these people, work alongside them. It is also worth reminding ourselves that in spite of this growth that I'm speaking about, somewhere between 15 and 25% of the world is still unreached. That is, they've never heard the gospel. And we have to think about reaching them. And I am utterly convinced that the people best suited to reaching these are the people from Africa and Asia and Latin America. There may be places where we from the Western world can go also. But that pioneer evangelism breaking into some of these countries, 12,000 unreached people groups. I am sure that if the thrust was coming from some of these other parts of the world, there would be automatically a greater receptivity to those people than there may be to us. Which doesn't mean to say there's nothing that we can do. We certainly have the resources, and in many cases we have some degree of expertise in certain specialized areas that we could pass on. And we could help those who are going out to do the pioneer evangelism and church planting. But we must not assume that we automatically know it all and are able to help. Simply because we think this should be done, that may not necessarily be the best thing to be done. If any people from the West are to meet these challenges and go into some overseas ministry, they have to be the most gifted of the people. There was a time years ago when you could get away, maybe, with people who weren't so gifted, but you can't do that anymore. There is no opportunity to stand in the market and preach, to stand on the corner and give out tracts. Most countries no longer allow that sort of thing. And of course, if you're a European, it is not going to get the sort of response it may have received 50 years ago. Some of these people go overseas, they come back home, some of them were nothing before they went, and when they come back, they're still nothing. There are people who've been missionaries and they come back and they've slotted into churches and you don't seem to see anything much happening in those churches. They're not making any waves, there doesn't seem to be any great progress. And you think, well, what were they doing over on the mission field? Because we are always going to be more effective, surely, in our own language, in our own culture, among our own people, than we are going to be when we're struggling with another language and another culture and another people. And so I think we have to stop and think, if we're going to send people, they have to be people of more than ordinary ability, with specialized gifts that they can contribute to the growing church, the virile church that there is in many of these countries. Now that doesn't mean, of course, that all the people in those countries are all they should be. Some of them, as I mentioned last night, are a bit superficial in their Christianity. But the leaders in many of these churches, they can see the problems, and they are keen to meet the need, not only to evangelize, and they're all pretty hot on evangelism, but they can see the need to have these people grounded in the Word of God. Just a couple of years ago, I was in Nigeria, and that really turned me on my head. I've never been more challenged in my life than I was by my time in Nigeria. Churches growing, huge numbers of people, Bible colleges all over the place, but all of them lacking in the sorts of resources that they need to help them do their ministry better. I'm just pausing here. I'll come back to Nigeria in a minute if I can remember. But what I wanted to say was that there are many areas that we can help, if not in the upfront preaching. There are audio visuals, for example. There are linguistic ministries. Their expertise is needed in knowing how to translate correctly to get into other languages. Expertise is needed in the technology required to run effective radio and television programs. Those are the sorts of things that I'm thinking, backroom jobs, if you wish, not in the full view, but helping behind the scenes to equip those who are doing the upfront ministry. Coming back to Nigeria, one of the things I noticed there, and I've noticed in other countries, was their goal setting. They don't just wander in and think, well, it might be a good idea to do something. When they go in to do something, they have goals. Now, I was there just after the 10th anniversary of a particular mission that had invited me there. This is a local indigenous mission. They had started 10 years ago outreaching. Their goal was within 3 years to have so many churches planted and then to have at least 5 local pastors established. Within 5 years, they wanted that number to be 10 or 15. They wanted to now have at least 2 evangelists reaching into the unreached tribal groups of Nigeria. Within 7 years, they then wanted to have so many churches, so many evangelists, and now they wanted to have at least 2 going into other countries. And then after 10 years, they wanted to have the number increasing, and now so many missionaries into the dangerous countries of the Islamic world and so on. The interesting thing was that after 10 years, they had exceeded every one of their goals. They already had 15 missionaries from Nigeria in other countries. If they had wanted to have 15 national workers at home, they now had 25. If they had wanted to plant 20 churches, they now had 50 churches, and so it went on. No matter where I went in that country, I found the people strategized. I found also that their giving was excellent. Now, this is a poor country. It's the most clapped out country that you'd ever want to see. The Nigerians are a very vigorous race. In fact, 1 in 4 Africans is a Nigerian. It's an overpopulated country. It's not very big in area, but it's overpopulated. It's the 10th most populous country in the world. They are very vigorous and aggressive, I suppose would be the word to use. But I found that where they had started their own churches, in other words, the churches that had come out of the indigenous activity, not the churches that were the progeny of former missionary work several decades earlier, these newer churches were very vigorous in their giving. One of the things I've noticed as I've travelled around certain countries is that some of the churches that have come out of missionary activity are not good at giving, because the missionaries tended to do a lot for them, or they brought in funds from overseas that were able to help in various resources. And as a result, the people became dependent. And so the giving is not as vigorous in some of those places as we might like it to be. But in these newer types of churches that I'm speaking about, I'm amazed at how generously they give. And yet, the people have to live on virtually nothing because the amount of funds they've got to work with isn't great. But they don't care about that. They just go out and do it, and they survive on very little. Some of them have self-supporting ministries. That is, they set up a taxi. Now, when I say taxi, don't think of a taxi as you see one in this city. You've got to change that picture quite radically when you know what a taxi is in Nigeria. Or it might be a little hair cutting shop, or it could be somebody with a plot of ground growing some maize, somebody raising a few goats or animals of some sort that can be commercially used to generate income. I've found this repeatedly throughout the country. People saying, look, we've got to find ways of supporting world mission without being dependent on others, and we don't have a lot of money, even though we give generously of our tithes and offerings. Let's find other ways and means of doing things. As a result, people are very responsive and very committed. A lot of self-sacrificing going on. They're also joining together in cooperative ventures. NEMA, Nigerian Evangelical Missions Association, is a group that has got together dozens of these indigenous mission enterprises that have grown up, so that they can save duplication. They can think strategically, they can support each other. And then if they're going into other places, they can work in cooperation rather than in competition. In contrast to this, you have, of course, the over-enthusiasm that happened in Eastern Europe when people from the West went barging in there after the collapse of communism. And very often, there was a big schmozzle. There was quite a mess left behind because aid came in the wrong way, and enthusiastic people came doing the wrong things and the wrong attitude. And so instead of a strong indigenous structure being built, something fairly brittle was emerging, and now people are having to go back and undo some of the wrong things that were done and reconstruct things in a better way. We've got to realize there's a changing role for Western missions and Western personnel and Western resources. What are some of those things? Well, let me move on now to speak of some of the specific issues. I mentioned literacy before, and I would certainly say literacy is one of the key things, because God gave us the Bible as a book. He did not give it to us on disc. He did not give it to us as a video. He did not give it to us in the waves of the air that move around invisibly in the atmosphere. He gave it to us in black and white, in print, in a book. And if we are going to see people grow, then we have to get them reading. We may not like to read ourselves. We may not think that this is the greatest thing, but we're stuck with it, whether we like it or not. God gave his revelation to us in the form of a book. And so our top priority must be to get people reading. And if they say they don't like reading, well, it's about time they change their habits. And that applies to people here. People say, I don't like reading. Well, you've got to change. You've got to start reading, because that is the way you're going to grow. Because God gave us his revelation in the form of a book. Now, that requires some skill. Teaching English as a second language has become a big thing, and that's very helpful. But other skills that are necessary to get the Bible into vernacular languages, and Bible helps into vernacular tongues. Skills in translating. This is something that needs input from people who know how to do it. We can be of great help there. The cities, I want to mention the cities, because there are great people movements into the cities. Many of the cities of the world are in crisis. Now, when you look at the New Testament, Paul went into the major population centers, planted churches, and then they went out and reached into the country areas. A lot of missionary work over the years has been done in country areas, also has been done in cities. But these days, the cities are in crisis because people are coming from the country areas into the cities. And they're creating ghettos, they're creating difficulties, they're searching for work. And before you know where you are, you have security problems, you have violence, you have curfews imposed in some of the big cities of some countries, even though in the country areas the people are quite placid. The cities present a great challenge, and we have to be thinking of how we can support the national ministries that are working in the cities. Education. I've just got a few things here. Education is a crying need everywhere. I'm not suggesting that we send in people into certain jobs that are going to put the local people out of work, because most of these countries already have high unemployment rates. There's a difficulty getting jobs. And the last thing I want to do is to encourage people from the West to go in and do the sorts of jobs that local people can do anyway. They're looking for ways and means of earning a living. We ought not to take those jobs from them. But there are things that we can contribute that are going to help other people produce income-generating activity. And so we may be able to help, and not necessarily by teaching specifically, we can of course do that, but by training the educators, helping in welfare and relief programs. Now, of course, a lot of that is coming from the West. The resources, the funds are coming from the West in a lot of the welfare and relief programs. We can have some input in that also. I mentioned English. Agriculture, just to get the yields up from the agricultural activity, to get a more efficient agricultural program going. It's not going to happen overnight. But these are areas where people from the West who are Christians and who have specific skills can obviously make a contribution which is going to be to the benefit of the country. And if they're committed Christians, then on the way through they're going to be able to do something to benefit the church at the same time. Medicine. The health situation in many countries is in total disarray, and they're all crying out for people with the necessary skills to help them here. But the two things that I want to really mention, if you have skills in computers or in teaching English, you will have access into almost any country of the world. Even countries where it's almost impossible to get in overtly as a Christian, you can almost always get in if you have a legitimate excuse or legitimate reason to be there through teaching English or teaching computers. The two go together to some degree, but they are the growth industries all around the world. We ought to be looking for ways and means of making a contribution there. But the thing I want most to talk about is Bible teaching and its resources. Now you may say, oh, that's the sort of thing you're into, so you're pushing your own barrow. Not really. I would have to be honest and say that every country I go to, that is the thing that people most talk about. Now, it's not talked about here. I would think that most people in our churches, if you talked about the needs in these countries, would not talk about the provision of biblical resources and Bible teaching as the main things. They would think of the poverty, of the needs, of some of those social welfare style activities I just mentioned, because we tend to see Christianity in terms of something sophisticated. We look at our society and think other people ought to have some of these benefits. But many people in our churches are not aware of their own spiritual poverty, of their lack of understanding of the word, and of the general flimsiness of their whole Christian life. They don't see the need for resources because they don't use them themselves. Many of them have given up on serious Bible reading. Many of them never have any sort of Bible study book that they would be using. And prayer, of course, has diminished at the same time. But when you go to these people, it's the other way. They will say, look, we need Bible teaching. They don't need evangelists. They are fired up about evangelism. They are better evangelists than we are. Everybody's evangelizing, and you're getting converts coming at a rate sometimes that is too quick to handle. They need to disciple people. Now, what is happening in some countries, and the leaders of the churches in those countries will tell you this, this is coming from the nationals themselves, they will say, they give them the well-worn stories, the prodigal son, the wise and foolish girls, the good Samaritan. They go round and round in a fairly predictable routine, but the result is the people are not being fed outside a narrow 5% or something of the Bible. And so the ignorance is entrenching them into a traditionalism which is going to grow into a legalism and a new nominalism, which in the end is going to be more of a nuisance than a help in the growth of the church. I have a few notes here. I was going to just tell you about some of these people. I don't think I really have time, but whether it was Kenya or Nigeria. Another man here I've got from Zambia who told me the same story. When I was in Tanzania, heard the same thing again, country after country. One man in Nigeria, he said, can you give us for our Bible school 20 sets of your books? He said, we only have the one set. He said, I write it all up on the blackboard and then the students copy down these notes. He said, it takes them so much time because they don't have any books. But he said, I'm using your books as a sort of textbook, but then they've got to copy it longhand. And he said, if you could give us 20, we could divide one between four because there are 80 students in the Bible school, and this way we could get through quicker. All the things we take for granted are non-existent in some of these places. And of course, our ministry is directed towards trying to get the Bible into the hands of these people and to get the resources into their hands. Some of the specific challenges. Before I mention the specific challenges, I just want to say a word about how we get this distorted view. This just came into my mind and I jotted it down and almost forgot to tell you. It comes out of last week where I said our view from the West is different. We have an inflated view of our own importance. If you talk about the Brethren movement, for example, we always think of all these old Brethren guys of whenever it was back in the 19th century and how they started the movement, all the history of the Brethren movement is this and that. If you just look at Brethren churches alone today, we in the Western world are outnumbered something, well, it could be as high as 10 to 1 by people from the non-Western world. If you just take the half dozen English-speaking countries, there are only six countries in the world where English is the first language of the majority of people. That's Canada, United States, Great Britain, Ireland, Australia and New Zealand. If you just put those countries together, and of course there are Brethren assemblies in Germany and France and Spain, Portugal, Italy and places like that. Just let's take those six countries that I just mentioned. The total number of assemblies is only about 3,000. I'll just take another six countries, Zambia, where there are over 1,000, Chad about 1,000, Angola 2,500, India about 1,500, Brazil over 1,000, Argentina almost 1,000. Just those six countries totals up to 8,000. So here we are outnumbered 3,000 to 8,000. And if you take the wider picture around all the countries of the Caribbean and other countries of Africa and Asia, we're going to be outnumbered somewhere between 6 to 1, 7 to 1, up to 10 to 1. We are sitting on only about 10% of the number of brethren assemblies in the world. And that's got to change our thinking. And we've got to realize that this whole thing's got to be turned around so that we get our resources out of these countries into some of these other countries. And I would challenge you, if you're a young person thinking of your vocation, don't think of lifestyle and what you can get here and how you can get on. Bring into your consideration the less privileged of the world and how we can help them. Think of how we can help the churches and the Bible colleges, how we can pass on the sorts of materials, get the commentaries and the dictionaries and the concordances and the Bibles available to these people. Maybe we can adopt some of these people as project. Maybe adopt isn't the right word because that implies superiority, I suppose. But you know what I mean. If we can take on board, that's an expression people like to use, some of these countries, some of the projects, and see what we can do in prayer and in giving and in interacting with some of these people. How we can make a response so that we, who are now in the minority in the West, as I've just tried to say, we're just in the minority, but yet we're sitting on 96% of the resources. How can we do something to get this stuff out of the West into the non-Western countries and shift the balance of resources and money so that it more honestly reflects the balance of the population and help those who are in such great need in these places around the world? Worldwide opportunity. There are opportunities all over the place. And I hope that I've given you just something here this morning that will stir your thinking, whet your appetite, whatever the expression is, but that will cause us to think, what can we do somehow to help our brothers and sisters in the growing yet suffering church around the world?